Coming up next is the Professor James McCanny Science Hour at the Crossroads. Now on shortwave, WWCR, frequency 5.070 at 7 p.m. Eastern on Thursdays, and also on Reality Radio Network Internet at www.realityradionetwork.com on Thursday evenings at 9 p.m. Eastern. And now, once again, here's your host, the Professor.
Good evening. June 26, 2008, and this week's science topic is meant to counter some ongoing misinformation that keeps coming out in the news media. It's just dumped on the public from every angle, and that is that global warming causes severe storms. And so I will work to dispel that myth tonight. I've talked about this from a number of points of view. Of course, my weather book, Principia Meteorologia, covers this topic and shows that, number one, there is no such thing as global warming. We are dependent on the sun minute by minute for our energy supply. And if the sun turned off all of a sudden, which I hope it doesn't do, but if the sun turned off all of a sudden, it would be minutes and certainly not more than an hour or two until this Earth went into a deep freeze. And within a day or two, we would simply all be dead. As you know, when the Earth turns around and the Earth is in nighttime, the sun, of course, is not hitting the dark side of the Earth, and that drops 20 degrees in a number of hours. Typically, in a single night, the Earth's temperature will drop around 20 degrees from the daytime. So give a day or two or three of no sun on the Earth at all. So imagine that dark side of the Earth coming around and there's no sun. Well, all of a sudden, we plummet another 20, 30 degrees. And so before the next day is out, the Earth is turning into a deep freeze. And as I said, I hope that kind of thing doesn't happen, but it just points to the fact that we are solely dependent on the sun for our energy, for our climate, for our weather. And also, as I pointed out, a lot of our weather systems depend on the electrical energy of the sun that's passing by us all the time. So, anyway, I'm going to play the devil's advocate tonight and say, let's imagine, even though it's not even true, let's imagine that there is some source of global warming. Now, the Earth is warming up, and it's actually getting back to normal after the last ice age, which, of course, was caused by that giant comet passing by a number of thousands of years ago. And the Earth spent a good deal of time in that comet tail. Therefore, the water influx, the influx of oil, hydrocarbons, the mountain ranges forming due to the close passage of the large comet nucleus. This is all recorded in extensive records from the historical record from the ancient. In fact, the main Bible that we use for the source of information throughout the world shows catastrophe after catastrophe. That's what it is. It's a book about ancient catastrophes. And if you understand that these were natural events in the solar system, then you will also understand that these issues can happen again. But at any rate, as I said, I will play the devil's advocate and talk about why global warming cannot cause severe weather. So even if we had global warming, it would not cause the severe storms or increase in severe storms or radical extremes of weather. All of these predictions that you see in the newspaper given by scientists have no basis in real science. In other words, the thermodynamics of the physics of the situation simply is not there. And of course, these predictions are made by scientists sitting in offices who are collecting a paycheck and really don't investigate what they're saying. But be that as it may, that will be the main science topic. And of course, first I want to get into the topics of farming. Just do a little bit of a summary. On the last two shows, those shows were not exactly planned shows in the sequence of science topics that I wanted to cover, but it was so important to deal with that because mainstream media and all of the top weather, or I should say all the top morning shows that are on the radio are simply avoiding that issue. And so they might talk about a few items, but I really had to cover in depth the true impact on farming and the fact that the United States cannot get back to what we call sustainable farming, where the farmers generate their own seed, can work year to year, they have organic techniques and which preserves the soil, on and on. So let me start out this show by just one or two, actually two statements. Number one, while the USA is busy squandering vast resources in two Middle Eastern pseudo-wars, the rest of the world is turning away and passing by us. And they're not going to look back. They're not going to come here after the United States has basically trashed the world for fun and profit and come back and help us out. And so the second quote of the day, one might say, people in the U.S. do not understand that there is a formula being worked on them for a total poverty and enslavement of the United States, and the rich will go last. We're already seeing that, where the wealthy people are losing their fortunes. And this is a little private information I got from a friend of mine who's a talk show host, who had friends who had investment in the Royal Bank of Scotland. So I'm not going to go into a lot of detail, but the Royal Bank of Scotland sent out memos to its investors stating to sell all stocks and bonds before September. And, of course, that kind of information is floating around every place, but this was a letter from the bank itself to their investors stating that they should simply sell all stocks and bonds prior to September 2008. I'll also talk a little bit about the about the harvest or lack of harvest that we are going to see in the year 2008 in the fall, and all of the other issues that will go with this not being announced or analyzed on mainstream news media. So at any rate, and I want to repeat this because I don't, and it sounds like a very drastic statement, but just imagine, and here's the example I want to use. How did, in ancient history, how did the Israelites become embonded in a country where basically they were free landowners, where they owned property, where they were part of the ongoing productive human element in those societies? How did they become enslaved? And what I want to get across here is that these same techniques for enslaving and bonding entire populations, these have been used before. Phony money, interest on phony money, taking over the monetary system, control of resources. All of these techniques have been used before, and little by little, like taking candy from a baby, the United States has handed over its entire wealth and security to a handful of, well, let's just say, European bankers. And now we're seeing our resources handed over, the food, as I said, is totally controlled by a couple companies. They call themselves the supermarket to the world. What an expression, ADM or Cargill. These corporations, which literally control all of the food of the world, also control the seed supply and how things are grown. They're in conjunction, of course, with the oil industry, which produces the fertilizer for these farming techniques, which put the farmer and the entire population at the mercy of these vast international corporations that have no bounds, that have no regulatory oversight, and who have taken our farming and turned it into something that the average person cannot get at. And worst of all, the farming population cannot get back to sustainable farming, and every attempt to do that appears to be blocked. So with that, just a quick mention on upcoming food shortage. When people cannot afford to live and have basic essentials, then they have only one option, and that is to become slaves. I'm going to say that again. We're seeing the fall 2008, the upcoming food shortage, when the harvest really is not going to even occur. By the way, the fields of Iowa, and I've talked about other with specialists about this topic, that when those fields in Iowa that were flooded, as they dry up, there's not going to be any topsoil, there will be no plants, there's no grass, there's nothing there to hold that soil in place. So when it dries out towards the end of the summer and the winds come, it's going to make that area into a dust bowl, in that polluted dust with typhoid and cholera and malaria and all the other diseases that will go along with the dust there that is totally polluted right now. That dust will carry over into other states and destroy other farmlands. That's a secondary effect. We don't even know the extent of that. But once again, I said, the upcoming food shortage, and couple this with the economic disaster based on interest on phony money, on an extensive set of phony wars that were meant to deplete this country, rising, skyrocketing fuel costs, the essentials for people to live, and next, water will be one of the very next things to go, and to be owned and to be controlled and administered. So, as I said, upcoming food shortages and all the other control of resources, when people cannot afford to live and have basic essentials, then they have only one option, and that is to become slaves. And that is the target goal of the people who are operating these worldwide corporations, because then you are nothing more than a slave, and that's where this country is headed. On June 20th, getting off to the little bit of weather work here, June 20th, a comet from the south now came and grazed the sun, actually fell into the sun. It caused multiple CMEs, coronal mass ejections, relatively small ones, and then the sun began streaming. I put a posting on this on my webpage regarding this, the jmccsci.com webpage. I put a posting showing this, and it's rather comical because NASA doesn't even acknowledge that the CMEs and solar effects occur anymore. They used to say it was coincidence, but how many times can you say over and over again, this is just coincidence? This is just coincidence. A comet hitting the sun, and here come the solar flares out of the sun. Oh, that's just coincidence again. Every time one of these comets comes near the sun, we have these immense coronal mass ejections or flares coming out of the sun. And NASA used to say just coincidence. They're not saying it anymore. They're not even acknowledging that it's even there, which is most comical. But at any rate, the June 20th comet striking the sun, causing CMEs and solar streaming, was partially the cause, or directly the cause, of the June 23rd severe weather that we saw around the world. There were many severe storms. The Philippines got hit very hard, storms in the Indian Ocean, storms over Central Africa, and of course the storms in the United States. It's very clear that meteorologists cannot predict weather anymore. Not at all, not even the faintest hint of being able to predict weather. They used to be pretty good at getting the temperature. Whether it rained or not was iffy, but now they can't even predict the temperature. So meteorologists, let's just put it this way, are totally unable to predict the weather. And of course, this is based on computer models run by NOAA, the National Association, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, what we call the National Weather Service, and their predictive computer models simply lack the detail regarding how to predict weather based on solar electrical conditions, factors which they do not include at all in weather prediction. And so that is leading up also to the main science topic tonight. That's why they can run out and grab this ridiculous global warming topic and say, oh, everything's due to global warming, or everything's due to El Nino or La Nina, and they can blame it on these one-liners, you might call it, like kind of like a comedian who stands up and he's got a bunch of one-liners. Well, the National Weather Service has their list of one-liners to cover for what they don't know. So on to June 24th, 2 days ago, a Himmokane, once again I posted this on my webpage, south of Iowa, coming out of the states of Nebraska and Kansas, looks very man-made, let me say that. This storm had a perfect shape. A Himmokane is a hurricane over land, and there's very little doubt that these storms are manipulated and controlled. It looks very man-made, perfect hurricane-type shape with the hurricane arms extending outwards, and it's hitting in exactly the place that they do not need any more water. This is just south of Iowa in the Mississippi River Valley, adding water to the already cresting Mississippi River. And let's look at the kind of damage that is being done. First, they hit Iowa. And, of course, eastern Iowa from Des Moines east to the Mississippi River. That was the area that was weather bombed day after day, week after week, until finally it just collapsed. And then the storms right now seem to be going just south of that. Well, as the water flows south through the Mississippi River Valley, this next wave of storms seems to be aimed at destroying the farming land south of Iowa. And I wouldn't be surprised if we see more storms coming in on a more southerly route as that crest of the Mississippi River, of the flooding that came from Iowa, as that reaches south to Missouri, to Arkansas, to those regions, to see more of these storms coming into those regions. So at any rate, that is something to keep an eye on. But once again, these storms look very man-made, very manipulated. Other than that, the sun has been relatively quiet of late. It looks like the sun is becoming a little more active as we head into the solar cycle, but it does very much appear that the weather that we're seeing right now, the weather in Nebraska, Kansas, and east to the Mississippi River, is man-manipulated, and as I said, targeting that area that least of all needs more rain. I've already talked about how Iowa will turn into a dust bowl and these storms will pollute the air and saturate eastern countryside, destroying other farms. But let's talk about the dust bowl effect as it goes out to other cities. Imagine you're living in Indiana, Ohio, the Kentucky-Tennessee region, east of the Mississippi, where the prevailing winds will be blowing this dust, and the dust will get up in the air and carry for hundreds of miles. Now imagine when this dust then lands on somebody's car, on the street. It'll be everywhere, and one thing that'll go along with this dust will be the germs, the bacteria that cause typhoid and cholera, malaria. And so tetanus, all of these will become more prevalent in the areas east of Iowa, east and southeast, as the trade winds pick up, as the floodwaters recede, as the dry, barren land starts to blow into dust clouds and travel easterly. All of this will go not only into the countryside, but into the cities and towns. It'll blanket those areas, and I would not be surprised to see a good deal of water pollution, where cities, a lot of the cities get their water from open water reserves, not necessarily from underground reserves, but it's going to cause a major pollution event in terms of bacteria and viruses in those eastern areas, eastern part of the United States. And once again, I talked about this a couple of weeks ago, but something that everybody should take a look at. You can find this on the internet, these maps. But the one that specifically really interested me was the soil depletion map of the world and showing the United States what we consider to be our farm belt from Nebraska, Kansas, Iowa, Wisconsin, Missouri, Arkansas, through those states, which are main farming communities, into Indiana and Ohio, and down a little bit into Kentucky, those states just south of Indiana. But that main area, it looks kind of like a cross, so to speak, but what we consider to be our main agricultural breadbasket of the United States is one of the most soil-depleted areas on the planet. Once again, due to poor farming practices from mega agribusinesses. And so this is a real problem because to get back to organic farming, one would have to work the soil so the soil is actually contributing to the plants. Right now, we have fertilizer contributing to the growth of plants. In fact, farmers say that the land no longer is the source of nutrients. It is just a medium to hold the plants and hold the fertilizer. And that's actually true. So what would it take for this country to get back to sustainable farming? The answer, it can't. It simply cannot. That has been destroyed. If you started on a program today, as I said last week, I'm just repeating what I said last week, but it's so very important, it would take 10 years with an all-out program with all-out 100% support from the government agencies, and basically this would put the big agribusinesses out of business, and that isn't going to happen because of the vast lobbying in Congress. So, basically, the United States agricultural business is toast. And there's only a few places that can respond and get back to any kind of real agriculture. And that's why I've encouraged people to, number one, get heirloom seeds, non-hybrid seeds, and grow your own garden. It has to be away from the hybrid fields. And there are techniques for protecting your plants. Say you have corn plants. They can be cross-pollinated with hybrids, which would destroy your seed crop from your non-hybrid plants, from your heirloom plants. So, but there are techniques they call it detasseling, and there are ways so that you can cross-pollinate your own crops and maintain that purity. But you really have to know what you're doing. So anyway, that's a topic I don't have time to go into tonight, and it's very complicated. Even experts have trouble maintaining seed stock. So just a couple quick announcements here. On June 21st, Louisiana Senate passed a bill requiring fluoridation in the state's water systems. And I saw this article was sent to me that professionals are asking the governor to veto this bill because basically it was moved through the middle of the night by the American Dental Association and the Louisiana Dental Association, who hired public relations and lobbying firms to promote the fluoridation bill. The Louisiana Dental Association boasts that they have huge access to legislatures. This article reads, on their website, they state that their activities include the use of staff and contract lobbyists, government publications, legislative reporting service, dinners for legislators, dentist day at the legislature, And the voter voice, which was apparently one of their lobbying conditions or front agencies. But here is the counter movement right now coming. Now, remember that nobody knew this was going on. This is backdoor politics at its best. There's a group of over 1,700 professionals calling for an end to water fluoridation worldwide. The website for this is fluoridealert.org. And remember, fluoride is spelled F-L-U-O-R-I-D-E, alert.org, www.fluoridealert.org. And that's one reason why I sell the water filters with fluoride attachments. The additional fluoride filters take the fluoride out of drinking water. And I have more information regarding that on my webpage. I do not drink water from the tap unless it has a fluoride filter on it. So that's one good reason to have your own fluoride removal system in your house. Also takes out arsenic, something that's very common in well water, in city wells and in rural wells around the country. But once again, Louisiana voting in through the back door fluoridation, and it's amazing how these people. I like this comment from one of the Fluoride Action Network professionals. He said, "If fluoridation is a source of pride to the dental lobby, why didn't they present their case openly and allow the legislature to hear experts from both sides of the issue? The public should be fully informed about measures that could adversely affect their health. This should not have been done by stealth." In other words, it should not have been railroaded through the legislature in the middle of the night without making any announcements. But that also just shows how worthless our legislators are, because they're just bought and paid for by these large organizations and profit communities like the Dental Association, etc. Just a quick comment. This came in from a listener this past week. Last week, I talked about Ezekiel bread, taking the grains, sprouting them, and making a sprout bread. There's no flour in the bread at all. And what's interesting is the sprouts, as you sprout the grains, it turns the starches and the gluten from the wheat. Now, gluten is the kind of the glue that holds the bread together, that gives dough its doughy consistency and holds the bread together. Those break down and change into enzymes and other forms of protein when the sprouting process occurs. And you only sprout these just a little bit, to maybe a half an inch, just so they're barely sprouted. Then you mix it together somewhat like mashed potato consistency and bake it. But something very interesting happens. It produces the equivalent protein of milk and eggs, along with 18 essential amino acids. So this was a historically recipe from the Old Testament. It is called Ezekiel bread, from the book of Ezekiel, chapter 4, verse 9. But it is given as a survival bread, in other words, a complete food. And I gave that information on my show last week. I don't have the entire recipe here. See if I can remember it. But you put the lentils, wheat, spelt, which is a form of wheat, beans, that was another ingredient, and you sprout all of these at the same time. Add water, let them sprout, blend it into a dough-like consistency, and then bake it. And you get a bread, a type of bread, that is a complete food. So one good question, where did these people find out about this? Where did Ezekiel get his information? Because I'm sure they didn't have nutritional specialists back then. Somebody knew something back then. But at any rate, I found this interesting, that the comment from this listener said that he was allergic to gluten in bread and had to stop eating bread, so he was going to try the sprout bread instead as a way of getting the grain, etc., the a way of eating grain, eating bread without the flour. One more quick topic. Why is China trying to colonize Africa? This is an article on the Telegraph that came June 21st. And basically, the Africa, the continent of Africa, is under attack from outside once again. The poor continent of Africa has always been the subject of imperialism. And there's no exception today that China is making great inroads into the resources of Africa. The article goes on to say that the oil resources of the Middle East have already been cut up by Russia and the United States. And so China has to look elsewhere for oil, for energy, and resources. And so it's going to, it's going to Africa. I know they get a lot of their oil from Venezuela. And so China is moving out in the world. China gets a lot of their timber, actually, from Russia. And they're cutting down the vast Siberian forests. And those will all be gone, I am told, by the year 2009, the vast forests. And there's a lot of cutting, of course, in the tropical, semi-tropical forests. So the resources of this world being depleted by countries who have no morals, who have no sense of saving. If you look at a country like, say, Mexico, there was once extensive forests. They had a population of deer and jaguar. Right now, the entire country of Mexico has been cut down. Everything's been devastated. And that's a good example of what happens in a country where there's no mind or reason to managing natural resources. It's just, oh gee, I need this piece of wood over here for firewood for tonight. And that's what is used, and that's what is consumed, and nobody replants anything. Nobody puts anything back. They just take. And so the country of Mexico, totally devastated. Remember in the early 1970s, when I was in Mexico, watching the vast number of people walking into the city from the countryside because there was simply nothing left there. All the little birds had been killed. Everything had been destroyed. So there was nothing there for the people. So they literally walked into the city with no job, no place to go. But it was more than what they had in the countryside. And I wonder how soon that's going to start happening in the good old USA. Just a little bit on disinformation before I get into the main science topic. This past week, the History Channel, I could not hardly believe my eyes, but then again, I will believe almost anything I see today. The History Channel pounding on the 2012 issue, and I couldn't believe the lack of science, the lack of supportable information. Just people willy-nilly, oh, I think this happens, and I think this is what happened, and the Mayans predicted this, and the Mayan calendar this, and the Mayan calendar that, and the ancient Mayan priest said this, and totally misinterpreting the whole situation with the Mayan calendar. But the History Channel putting that up there, and of course the idea is that 2012, they're saying that the disaster will happen on Earth. They're saying that there's this, some kind of a magical alignment of the Earth and the galaxy. No science involved at all, at all. No scientific concepts of why Earth aligning with the galactic center would cause anything. But it's just people that don't know anything. They're not scientists, but clearly, the thing I want to pass on to you is the amount of money and production that went into this particular program on the History Channel, followed immediately by another show about Armageddon, the supposed end of the world. And so, once again, very large amount of production cost in these programs. And, of course, on prime time History Channel TV that goes out on cable. So the point is, somebody is putting a tremendous amount of money and time into misinformation to lead the public astray. And they're doing a good job of it, and the majority of the public will be fooled. And there's no question about that. There's no question in my mind that the vast majority of public would be fooled. But there's another positive side to that. Those are the people you wouldn't want around anyway in a case of emergency, because they are the sheep. They're the people that are led here and there and have bought the entire program of phony money, phony wars. They bought all of that hook, line, and sinker, so they're buying this hook, line, and sinker. And when the chips are down, when the emergencies start to come into place, you really don't want those people around. Believe me, you would be far better off with them over there still believing all of their fairy tales and not interfering with your serious efforts to try and survive, because they're going to do nothing but drag down the people they're associated with. That's all they can do now is use credit cards, go to the grocery store, and they think life is going to continue on as normal. Those are the sheeple. So, yeah, you don't want those people around. That's why I always say, I'm not a preacher. I'm not trying to convert everybody. I'm not trying to make converts of anyone out there. People have to convert themselves, get their brain in order, get the rest of their life in order, and start to wake up. And if they don't do that on their own, I'm sorry, I'm not going to try and go and talk to them, and I don't expect you to either. And if I know a lot of people email in and they say, gee, I try and tell people, say, this is really important, you should listen to this, you should go do this, and they say, people just don't want to listen, and that's right. And when the chips come down, they're going to be the first person to your door saying, gee, you were saving all this stuff. I'm over here now. Why don't you give some of it to me? And that's exactly what's going to happen. So those lost people are going to be lost, and they're the best lost on their own. They can go to the government camps at that point, because that's about as worthless as they will be. On NPR this week, global warming disinformation from NASA on an early morning interview on National Public Radio, spouting about global warming, how global warming is causing all of our bad weather. This month, Discover Magazine, June issue of Discover Magazine, disinformation on weather. Isn't it interesting that that magazine had to have been planned months ago, but coincides with the bad weather we're having in Iowa. And once again, global warming. Oh, global warming is the cause of all of this. People, you caused it by driving your SUVs around it. Astronomy Magazine this month had a special issue called Extreme Weather. Total disinformation, trying to get people to think that the government is working on understanding storms and understanding how severe weather occurs. Oh, but it's global warming. So the bottom line is the month of June saw unprecedented amounts of misinformation coming out on all fronts, coming at people from National Public Radio, Discover Magazine, Astronomy Magazine, the History Channel, just bombarded. And by the way, when this happens, this is planned. This is not coincidence, folks. This is planned. Someone is spending a lot of time and money and effort and coordination to mislead the public, especially on the issue of weather and weather disasters and earth disasters. That, you know, aligning with the center of the galaxy will cause tremendous earth changes. It's it's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous, but how many people buy it? Just wanted to end this little discussion before the main science topic. There used to be a show on TV called What's My Line? And typically three characters would come on the show, and then there was a panel who would ask questions to the three guests. And all three of the guests would stand up and say, my name is so-and-so. They'd all repeat the same name. And I am, a NASA scientist, or I am professional, whatever they claimed they were. Usually some unusual kind of job or profession. And it was the panel's job was to ask them questions to see if they could find out who the real person was, the real professional person, and then there were two imposters. And I always thought it was very funny that, you know, many times the imposters would be picked by the people, and they had absolutely no history, no background at all in what they were claiming to be an expert. And so I said, well, in the modern life arena, news programs, the Sunday morning talk shows on TV, the supposedly hard-hitting news journalists, etc., you know, they're supposed to be, you know, put there because they're going to ask the questions the public wants to know. And I got a kick out of course, the Sunday morning show Meet the Press. We call it jokingly Meet the Repressed because they never ask tough questions. Dick Cheney always liked to go on the show because he said he could control the show. He would be able to move his agenda. And you're just waiting for this hard-hitting talk show journalist to ask tough questions, and they never did. So the amount of misinformation and the number of imposters floating around the internet, the primetime news, the newspapers, and filtering down to all other TV shows, popularized TV shows, trying to misinform the public, just pounding the public with these topics. And one of the most central topics in all of this is global warming. And then, of course, everything is caused by global warming. The melting of the ice caps and the severe weather we're seeing. Now, I want to give a very simple example. In fact, I start out my weather book by stating this, that if we just had the Earth and its atmosphere and just the light coming from the sun, if we had those elements, and these are the major elements which are used in the NOAA weather prediction computer models, if we just had that as input to our planet, we would have very bland weather. We would have maybe a mild breeze. It probably wouldn't even be called a breeze. It would be called an air movement around the planet, around planet Earth, and literally we would have no weather, we wouldn't have any severe weather, we wouldn't have tornadoes, there would be no hurricanes. None of these severe storm systems would exist at all. Because if you are blanketed from the North Pole to the South Pole with an even illumination of light from the sun, remember that the X-rays and the UV primarily are filtered out high in the atmosphere, and also the infrared is filtered out up high in the atmosphere, so the main source of light that comes down to the surface of the Earth is visible light. And you can go out and get a suntan, you can feel how warm that sun is, 93 million miles away, causing heat on our planet, but if that were our only source of energy on planet Earth, we would have very bland weather. Let's look at the three laws of thermodynamics. Now, basically, they have to do with energy and what happens to energy when it comes into a system. And let's talk about organizing that energy into severe storms. First of all, you have to do an energy calculation and see how much energy there is in a storm. Let's take a hurricane. There's an extremely large amount of energy in a hurricane. If you took the sum total of all of the light energy coming in on Earth on a given day, there would not be sufficient energy to concentrate in that hurricane, even if you had a method to do it. The energy that they claim is driving that hurricane is from supposedly warm water. Number one, we've seen hurricanes off in the North Atlantic. We've seen hurricanes in the North Pacific. And they're up there acting just like a hurricane, high winds, rotating clouds, etc. And there's no warm water. But be that as it may, as I said, if you took for a major-sized hurricane like Floyd or Andrew, any of the major hurricanes or the major storms in the southern southwest Pacific that move through the Indian Ocean, etc. If you took the sum total of energy that comes in from the sun in the form of light energy on a given day, there would not be enough energy to form a single small hurricane, let alone a big one. And then you'd be pressed with the hard, difficult task of trying to figure out how all this energy from all over the world gets concentrated in a hurricane, but still, it doesn't detract from the energy that's all over the rest of the world at the same time. So you have a number of theoretical problems. Now you have people sitting in offices or going on radio shows from NASA and saying global warming, it's increasing the hurricanes, it's going to cause more severe weather and extremes of weather. Well, how does a little bit of extra heat in the atmosphere, of which we've already got plenty, how does a minor amount of heat added to the atmosphere cause more severe storms? How does that extra energy get organized into a storm over in the Atlantic Ocean? Once again, science is taking a back seat to garbage. And these are professional scientists, people with PhDs. They all have PhDs. And they're spouting this off on NPR, National Public Radio, on TV, on the internet, on official government sites. It's garbage. There is absolutely no way that even a little bit of additional heat could cause more severe storms, because there's no mechanism on this planet to take energy from all around the planet and organize it into individual severe storms. That process doesn't exist in the first place. So adding a little energy is not going to change physics. It's not going to change the three laws of thermodynamics. Now, I wanted to add this type of scenario. If you opened your refrigerator door on a hot summer day, it's hot in the house, you open your refrigerator door, and you expect the refrigerator to get colder inside. Now, most people would say, that's silly. That's ridiculous. Of course you wouldn't stand there with the refrigerator door open and expect the refrigerator to get cold when it's hot in the room. You're going to say the heat from the room is going to go in and it's going to make everything in the refrigerator warmer. But the scientists at NASA, the scientists at NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, what we call the National Weather Service, are expecting you to believe that somehow energy can organize itself from a heat sink and go into that area where there is no energy. Let's take another example. At the base of a hurricane or at the base of a tornado, there's a tremendous low pressure cell. Now, you have air rushing into that and up the vertical column at a tremendous rate of speed. Now, you imagine a hurricane. You have the winds pouring into the center low pressure cell at about 150 miles an hour in a fully developed large hurricane right towards the eye. The wind coming in, being drawn into that central vortex area, coming in at 150 miles an hour from all directions. How do you keep the low pressure cell there? If you didn't have a way to maintain that, like a giant vacuum cleaner, that would reduce that low pressure cell instantaneously to be a high pressure cell, because all this air is trying to go in there. So how exactly does this low pressure cell remain in the middle at the bottom of the eye of the hurricane? Well, the answer is that the air is being drawn up the column by electrical forces that connect up into the ionosphere. That the source of power for hurricanes, for tornadoes, for thunderstorms, for our severe weather comes from literally outside the planet, and it is electrical. It has nothing to do with sunlight. It has nothing to do with the visible electromagnetic energy, what we call light, that is coming and blanketing the Earth very evenly all over the surface of the Earth. Severe storms have nothing to do with that at all. Yet you have thousands of scientists running around collecting a paycheck claiming that severe weather is being augmented by global warming. Now, these are issues that even a non-scientist can understand. My weather book is written for the general public, and I know scientists have read the book also. There are many issues at stake in the scientific community. Let's just take another one, for example. Scientists have instruments all over the solar system now, and they're measuring magnetic fields. And they're talking about the magnetic fields as if they were the original source of energy, and the magnetic fields interact. But one of the most basic fundamental laws of physics states that you don't have magnetic fields unless charge moves. Magnetic fields are the result of moving electrical charge. Even in a permanent magnet, you will not have a permanent magnet in the first place unless that particular piece of material, magnetic material, was embedded in a magnetic field for a period of time as it cooled to become a solid, called the Curie temperature of the solid. And so even if you have a permanent magnet in nature, it's an indication that there was a current flow in that vicinity to maintain the external magnetic field, and that was sustained for a long enough period of time for that iron to solidify and maintain the magnetic field in the metal. And that's relatively, I think, most high school physics and science courses cover those types of topics, so it isn't very advanced. Yet, you have scientists who are still debating the qualities and properties of magnetic fields as if they were out there all by themselves. Magnetic fields just exist, and they move around, and they talk to each other, and they shake hands, and they reconnect. They do all of these wonderful things, but they never get to the primary cause, the moving electrical charge. And the reason is because scientists are forbidden to talk about electric fields in outer space. That's the tier two science, the garbage science that is fed to the public, and which many scientists have bought off on. I go to these meetings, and I'm just amazed repeatedly that year after year, decade after decade, scientists continue to talk about magnetic reconnection and the magnetohydrodynamic plasmas and effects, and how can these exist without a primary cause of electric fields and electric currents? Well, they can't. So you have to understand what causes electric fields, what causes electric currents, and therefore what causes magnetic fields. Magnetic fields are a secondary effect. Now, why am I talking about that during a discussion of severe weather? Well, it's very similar. When you look at a hurricane or a tornado, you have to look at, number one, the amount of energy involved in the storm. You have to decide where is that energy coming from, where is the available energy source, and how does it get from the available energy source to the storm. And all of this has been a bunch of mishmash hand-waving. Scientists say, oh, well, the clouds move around and they create convection. That's why I mentioned the Discover magazine and the astronomy special on extreme weather that came out in June, because they don't address those issues. They have superfluous science that is non-rigorous. They don't. They have these hand-waving arguments. I remember one picture. They had a tornado and they're pointing at the bottom, and then the cone of the tornado, etc. And they really, when they're talking about these, that it's kind of like the anatomy of a tornado, but they don't talk about where the energy sources are, what causes this. But they're talking about a number of tier two scientific installations, universities, etc., which are studying the physics of these storms to try and better understand them. Well, the physics of these storms has been worked out a long time ago, but that's where my theoretical work comes in from decades ago. But you have to understand that there are electrical sources to these storms, and they are from outside the planet. They have nothing to do with standard science or their belief that these storms are somehow created by sunlight. Let's look at the jet streams. Another anomalous set of weather phenomenon if you look at Earth weather. Here are jet streams. They move sometimes as much as 600 miles an hour up in the upper atmosphere, and they can drive our lower weather systems. These are actually coupled with the magnetic field and the electrical currents that flow around Earth. Once again, electrical in nature. Yet, in standard science, they have the sunlight coming in, heating up the ground, and then somehow this general heat energy source that's at the ground somehow magically moves up and couples up to these little belts of energy up in the atmosphere and makes them move at 600 miles an hour. The northern one and the southern one in the easterly direction and the equatorial belt in the westerly direction. It doesn't make any sense. There's no, if you look simply at light coming into the Earth, there's no method known, and there could not be any method known, to drive individual jet streams around the Earth, two in the easterly direction and one in the westerly direction. How does that work? The answer, once again, is that these are electrical. And it makes a lot of sense if you understand that the equatorial one that moves west is electron primarily. That's what drives the central hurricane systems, and that's why those hurricane systems move west, because the electron belt that drives them is moving in a westerly direction. And the easterly moving belts up in the northern and southern hemisphere are positively charged, and they move in the other direction. They're all coupled together magnetically. These are electrical currents that drive magnetic fields that couple together. Nothing mysterious about it if you understand this in terms of electromagnetic properties of the planet, of the solar system, and what ultimately drives them is the electrical current coming out of the solar wind that emanates from the sun. All of these things, very understandable. How, when I do my weather prediction and I look at the coupling of planets, electrical coupling, and the motion of the planets, and the different phases of the new moon, full moon, etc., that you can very much predict when severe weather might occur. And then that can be enhanced by local conditions. In case, for example, this past week, we had a comet come by the sun, something that is not predictable. Nobody knew that comet was going to come in. But as it did, then that is coupled into the system. That is another factor. And all of a sudden, we have severe weather caused by a comet passing near the sun. Something that is absolutely devoid from any meteorological records, yet the meteorology experts on TV would stand there and say, we don't have any idea what's causing this severe weather. So what do? They say, well, this is due to global warming. Then they have a NASA expert go on the radio and say, oh, this is all due to global warming. All this severe weather we're seeing in Iowa is due to global warming. But you see, the beauty of this is now the people who are manipulating these storms, the people who are weather bombing our country, can do it with complete immunity and impunity, and nobody is any the wiser. It's just Mother Nature. It's just Mother Nature kicking up her heels and causing all this damage on Earth. Well, I'm out of time once again. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we're at the crossroads. Good night.